Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. Michelle Goodwin will join us near the end of the program. Discussion of race in the United States usually groups people into several broad categories: white, black, Latino, indigenous, and Asian, by which most people mean East Asian. But what about South Asians like my guest Deepa Iyer and me? What about Arab, Muslim, and Sikh communities? After the September 11th attacks in particular, these communities have worked to insert themselves into the discourse of racial justice in the United States. And writing about that is Deepa Iyer, former executive director of South Asian Americans Leading Together, SALT, who teaches in the Asian American Studies program at the University of Maryland. Her new book is entitled We Too Sing America: South Asian, Arab, Muslim, and Sikh Immigrants Share Our Multiracial Future. Welcome to Uprising, Deepa.
Thank you, Sonali.
Now, recently, there was a hate crime in Chicago against a Sikh man, Inderjeet Singh Mukher, and you open your book with the 2012 story of the Oak Creek Massacre. And we've seen after September 11th, intermittent hate crimes against Sikh Americans in particular, because primarily likely of their turbans and beards that bigots mistake for being Muslim. And I'm wondering if these sorts of hate crimes you found in your research really ramped up strongly after September 11th. I know that's an obvious question, but I think it's important to sort of draw that line clearly.
No, definitely. I think it is important for us to know that obviously South Asians, Arabs, Muslims, and Sikhs were victims of hate violence well before 9/11, and I talk a little bit about the historical background of hate violence against these communities in the book. But as you said, Sonali, the hate violence really increased disproportionately in the weeks and months after 9/11. And we saw that in a variety of different ways. Unfortunately, there were murders, harassment on the streets, assaults, discrimination in public places, employment. But a lot of that actually tapered down a bit. However, over the last few years in particular, we have seen again sort of this uptick in terms of hate violence. And you alluded to the most recent horrific incident against Mr. Mukher, a father in Chicago who was assaulted while he was driving to the grocery store. And some of the reasons for this uptick is really around the media narratives that we continue to see that show that these communities are worthy of suspicion, that there's something wrong about them, that they're dangerous, and public policies that again continue to reinforce this public feeling that these communities should be profiled and targeted in some way.
Now, the name of your book, We Too Sing America, is, I understand, based on a line from a Langston Hughes poem. Can you share with us what you mean by this term, We Too Sing America?
Yes, about 90 years ago, Langston Hughes wrote a very poignant poem, I Too and the Darker.
We're having some trouble hearing you, Deepa. I Too Sing America was the first line of the poem, I Am the Darker Brother.
Right, that's right. And I thought that the poem really resonated with some of the themes in the book, because in the book, I'm trying to really document and uplift some of the stories of young people in the South Asian, Muslim, Arab, and Sikh communities who are often seen as others, in the same way that Langston Hughes portrayed Black people as others. But these individuals that I write about and so many others around the country are really trying to rebuild and reshape an America where all of us belong. And so that's why the poem really resonated with me.
I think that part of the complexity of how the United States deals with these myriad communities is that they are so complex. The histories are complex. The geographies are complex. The skin tones are varied. The dress is varied. The class privilege is varied. While many people in the South Asian and Arab and Muslim communities are immigrants, many are Muslim converts. Some in the Sikh community have been in the United States for generations. So does that complexity sort of muddy the waters, sort of prevent mainstream America from getting a clearer understanding? Because it's not a community that can be easily pegged.
That's true. And I think that the diversity in these communities are clearly a place where we can do better in terms of understanding what our histories are in this country, and also what the commonalities are in terms of the experiences that South Asian, Arab, Muslim, and Sikh communities face, along with the importance of understanding shared histories, the importance of understanding how institutions of white supremacy have really created a situation for the post 9/11 communities that is around targeting, profiling, deportation. Part of what I'm hoping that this book will generate some conversations around is, how can we actually draw the links between our shared histories? How can we understand how institutions and policies are affecting communities of color in similar ways? And what do we do about that?
Would you say that before September 11th, many of these communities had sort of existed beneath the surface of the mainstream, going about their lives, you know, in various ways, whether in academia or behind the counter of a convenience store or any other sort of way in which you can imagine people? But then 9/11 happened. And in your book, you have a section called 9/11 Racialized Us. And suddenly, many communities, to some extent, started to feel what it was like to be vilified. Although, of course, we should mention Muslim and Arab communities had long been stereotyped as terrorists. So
that's right. That's right. You know, the writer Vijay Prashad often talks about how South Asians in particular were on racial probation before 9/11. And what I think he means by that is that South Asians could actually live under this guise, this lie, in a sense, that we were not necessarily victims of discrimination or subjects of bias or subjects of othering in this country. Even though, as you mentioned, that is not true. And we have many examples in South Asian American history where that othering has happened time and again. But certainly after 9/11, this racial probationary status that Vijay Prashad talks about really changed. And all of a sudden, South Asians, you know, if you're talking about Hindus, Muslims, Sikhs, anyone who looked brown and was from a particular part of the world became immediately suspect. And so what that meant was, in a sense, this sense of racialization, the sense of understanding, oh, okay, we too are people of color in this country who face similar forms of othering that other communities of color have felt. And I especially found this, you know, in my time at SALT, when we would do workshops with young people, young South Asians, and we would ask them, what was your point of entry into understanding that you were a person of color? And almost everybody would talk about 9/11 being that moment of racialization, where they realized that, you know, their name, where they came from, their accent, their language, their faith, immediately put them in a situation at school where they were seen as being different, and different in a bad way. And so that is that idea of racialization that a lot of people have felt in South Asian communities since 9/11.
I love this section in your book where you describe or attempt to describe the hierarchy of race in this country. You say, at times, non-Black communities of color have colluded consciously and unwittingly to maintain white supremacy and its racial hierarchy in place. Our positions on the racial ladder in America dictate the opportunities, privileges, and entitlements that are available to us. Blacks are at the bottom while whites maintain the top position. Latinos, Arabs, and Asians fall in the middle positions. The racial ladder preserves white privilege while propping anti-Black racism. Racial groups in the middle maintain and reinforce this structure, sometimes with their consent. And Deepa, I thought this was really important. I had recently, one of my columns on Truth Dig addressed the issue of anti-Black racism among Asian communities, which is not something, you know, that people like to talk about, but I think does need to be maintained. So in acknowledging this racial structure, can we work to dismantle our place in it?
Acknowledging the racial structure is one important part of dismantling it, but then we have to really take the steps that are necessary. And so in the book, I talk about the importance of declining the so-called racial bribe, you know, the invitation, especially that is given to South Asian communities to climb up that ladder that you talked about, to embrace the false embrace of whiteness, we have to decline that invitation time and again and do so vociferously and vigorously at every turn.
And for some people, I should say that's a little more challenging because there are lots of people in these communities you describe who have light skin. Their names might sound foreign, but who can pass as white till their names come about. So for some, that's quite challenging.
Yes, and that is also something that I think we're going to have to confront when we think about race categories in this country, because even the construct, the census construct of what is white includes, as I mentioned in this book, Arabs. And many of the people that I talk to, Arabs, Kurds, and others, feel that whiteness is not a privilege that they face in any way, even if their skin color is more white, as you mentioned, or even if the government sees them as white. So these racial classifications are shifting. But I think, going back to the point about South Asians and dismantling the racial ladder, acknowledgement is key, declining the bribe is key, but also what's important, and I think that we've seen some of this, especially with the movement for Black Lives, where we do see South Asians, Muslims, Arabs, and Sikhs making very key statements and stands about what it means to be in solidarity with the movement, and at the same time, actually attacking the anti-Black racism within our own communities that is very vicious. And so all of those types of acts and actions and acknowledgments, I think, need to occur for us to be able to dismantle the racial hierarchy.
And these complexities also exist within the Latino community, where there are, of course, skin tone variations, white Latinos, indigenous Latinos, etc. And speaking of Latinos, there's been a lot of collaboration, and I think quite heartening collaboration between undocumented folks in the South Asian Arab Muslim communities and undocumented immigrants from Latin America countries. And that's an important aspect of the work that's being done today to dismantle racism in this country. Can you tell us a little bit about how the communities that you write about have joined the movement to advocate for the undocumented?
Yes. So Asian Americans have long been a part of the immigrant rights movement in this country because Asian Americans have really been seen as both undesirable immigrants at some points in our history, being called the brown horde, for example, coming over and changing our customs and culture. So we denied them naturalization, we denied them economic benefits and the like. But at other points in our history, we've seen Asian American immigrants as desirable immigrants. People who are coming over as entrepreneurs and investors and economic contributors and drivers. So this kind of push-pull tendency of the good and bad immigrant is something that Asian Americans are very familiar with. But what has been happening over the last 15 to 20 years is that Asian Americans, including South Asians, have in particular really been trying to eliminate this kind of dichotomy that exists of the good and bad immigrant by talking about how, in particular, centralizing undocumented immigrants. And some of the people that I mentioned in the book, like Eves Gomes, Hina Naveed, Bhupendra Ram, these are all young undocumented South Asian immigrants who have also taken leadership roles in talking about their own stories of deportation, migration, criminalization, and also making it very clear that there are undocumented South Asians in the Asian American community, and that they are a big part of trying to call for some of the changes to the immigration system. So it's important that Asian Americans are remaining kind of this force of centralizing how undocumented people are actually driving some of the changes that we're seeing in immigration at all.
And then finally, going back to the topic that we started with around the 9/11 racializing us, of course, outside the bounds of the United States, many of the people in the communities you describe, South Asians, Arabs, Muslims, have relatives, have ties to the very countries that the United States has very, very, very destructive policies towards. And I'm wondering if people in these communities make connections between domestic policies and foreign policies that impact them.
Absolutely. We've seen, for example, when the United States is very visibly involved in conflict in back, our countries back home, that there is an impact here. So we have seen, for example, upticks in terms of hate violence, in terms of assault, name calling and the like, when the United States is engaging abroad. But what we've also seen is a real conflict that many communities here face in terms of understanding what their own role is. You know, I specifically remember talking to many Kurds in Nashville, Tennessee, who talked about that, how they're feeling extremely conflicted about the United States government's role in the Middle East and how it's affecting them here. And so as we become a more diverse society, a more global society, I think we're going to have to have some of these conversations out in the open about what it means to be American, about what it means to be an American with, as you said, Sonali, families and relatives back home, how United States policies back home are affecting us here. Those are some of the conversations that we need to be having as our racial landscape shifts.
Deepa, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Best of luck with your new book.
Thank you so much, Sonali.
My guest is Deepa Iyer. We've been talking about her book, We Too Sing, America, South Asian, Arab, Muslim, and Sikh Immigrants Shape Our Multiracial Future. Again, Deepa Iyer, last name I-Y-E-R. She's the former executive director of South Asian Americans Leading Together, or SALT. She teaches in the Asian American Studies program at the University of Maryland. This is Uprising. We'll be right back.